Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Dan Devine on Twitter or X at Your Man Devine. He writes for Yahoo about the NBA. The podcast is no cap room. It is essential. Dan joins me now. He's written about the Sixers and the Knicks and Joel Embiid and his a dramatic performance, injury return, all of that. Sixers were pretty good when Joel Embiid was on the court.
They are, and also just noting that about 25 minutes ago, they announced that Tyrese Maxey's questionable tonight with an illness. So that's kind of a big one, considering he had a game-high 33 in Game 1. Here's the thing. Just as we all predicted, Tom Thibodeau relying on his bench, right? Everybody's favorite minutes captain. The Knicks win that game because when Jalen Brunson was having an off night and off, full marks to the Sixers defense for that. They had other guys who can put the ball in the basket. Deuce McBride, their backup point guard, had a game of his life in his first real big playoff game. Bojan Bogdanovic came off the bench and was great. Mitchell Robinson played fantastic defense and was a huge part of the offensive rebounding effort. And then when the Sixers didn't have Joel Embiid on the floor, they just didn't have enough juice elsewhere, which is why your heart catches into your throat when he goes Tracy McGrady off the glass to slam home a dunk and then lands on the knee that he had surgery on 2 months ago, with every Sixers fan I have to imagine across this world of ours saying, like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Why the hell would you do that? Don't do that. And then everything's up in the air after that. So, yeah, I mean, as has been the case through, three coaches and several front offices and however many number twos and co-stars and all the churn at the back of the roster, the Sixers are going to go as Joel Embiid goes. And if he's on the court, they got a chance. And if he doesn't, I'm not sure they do.
It feels like Brunson going 8-26. Like, it feels like this was a moment for the Sixers to get the Knicks, right? And because you can't expect that from Jalen Brunson every night, and now obviously with the injury and now the illness, things look precarious. I would say that. Yes.
Yes. But that's, I mean, we've also, the Knicks have, where I think Jimmy Butler messed up his knee in the first game against the Knicks in the second round last season, didn't play the second, and then the Heat came out and bombed, right, 63s, and Bam Adebayo played great and they almost got him. So it's, the second and we saw it over the weekend, right? Kawhi Leonard is not available for game one. Everybody's been picking the Mavs for 2 weeks, and then they score 8 points in the second quarter against that Clippers team. So, good teams with a lot of good players will find ways to coordinate things. Nick Nurse is a very creative coach, and I think they felt pretty good about their defensive game plan going in. They didn't think that Brunson going 8-26 was fluky. They thought that was the result of process, and I think, you go back and you look at some of those looks, you understand it. But if you can't keep the Knicks from getting 23 offensive rebounds, I think that's job one. Can you figure out a way to keep them off the glass? Because if the Knicks can survive shooting 37% or whatever, if they're picking up literally every other miss, they rebounded 50% of their misses in the game. And if you can't clean that up, then those possessions are going to last forever and be a real tough hang.
So home teams 8-0, first time since 2013, and 6 double-digit games. It wasn't the best weekend in terms of just in terms of competitiveness, but it is interesting within that, like, there were some surprises. I don't know that people thought Minnesota would handle Phoenix the way they did, and that was damn impressive.
Absolutely, and I mean, including the dope you're on the phone with right now. I wrote the preview for that series at Yahoo Sports, and I was like, "Hey, the Suns went 3-0 in this matchup, and they have a really good game plan for how to defend Anthony Edwards." And Anthony Edwards reminded folks like me that there's really no game plan for getting set on fire. When he's just like, "Yeah, you can throw whatever gap help you want at me. I'm going over the top of it and scoring." And then also, things that seem disadvantageous matchup wise, like, you ask 100 people, "Do you think it's a good idea for Karl Anthony Towns to guard Kevin Durant?" And they're going to get 100 no's, and maybe even some God no's in there. But if you're able to juggle the matchups and say, all right, maybe this point it pushes Phoenix toward matchup hunting a little bit more in a way that gets them out of the natural flow and rhythm of their offense, and then if you're, you know, a defense as good as Minnesota with all that size, all that length, all those plus defenders, if you like, you knock yourself off your rhythm a little bit, they're going to pounce on you. They're going to make you feel like you're playing against eight guys on the floor. When Devin Booker gets the ball swung to him, but it's not against, you know, a bent floor or an easy matchup, you know, he could struggle. You know, even really, you know, some of the best players can struggle in those matchups. So you saw that in multiple series where there's just you give smart coaches and teams that know how to do things, certain things really well. You give them a week to figure some stuff out and get ready. Or even in the case of like the Pelicans, they had to, you know, sing for their supper right up until the last night of the play-in, and they also didn't have Zion Williamson, and they go into Oklahoma City and they were in that game until it was like one of the only tight games of the weekend. But they go into there and they're down to the final possession. You know, didn't necessarily cover themselves in glory with some of the choices they made, and some of the, you know, Brandon Ingram had a really rough night. Lou Dort will make that happen to you, but I think what we've seen, and obviously the results being 8-0 home teams is one thing, but we expected a lot of you know, lower seeds maybe jumping up and taking a bite out of the favorites, because there didn't seem like a whole lot of big favorites. The league, with the exception of the Celtics, and to a lesser extent, I guess, the Nuggets, the league has felt a lot flatter this season. I think it was more, every playoff team is 46-plus wins, and, you know, and the Pelicans, 49 for the eighth seed in the West. And you just, like, there's a lot of talent there, and I think that can sort of level off and equalize to where what you expected, you know, what it seemed, you know, the regular season projections indicated, that stuff can get tossed out pretty quick when you give smart coaches and smart players a week to figure some stuff out.
Yeah, there were. I think a lot of people, you know, Phoenix, certainly people gave Phoenix a good chance to beat Minnesota. They gave the Pacers a good chance to beat Milwaukee without Giannis, and Dallas, the Clippers, without Kawhi. Does the Clippers without Kawhi, does this fall into the smart coaches category?
I mean, I think it falls into James Harden. Apparently, the cape only fits when the superstar is out. And even then, it might only fit for one or two games. But if you get one or two, that's huge. That was the biggest thing. But the Clippers basically seemed like they were, yes, Tyronn Lue, you know, great coach and excellent at getting his guys prepared and having, you know, the counter to your counter ready to go. Like, he's, as far as, you know, tactical adjustments and sort of preparation, one of the very best in the league. You know, when you hear people talk about it, they talk about Spo, they talk about him. You know, Mark Daigneault's getting into that conversation in Oklahoma City, but there's not a lot of guys on that level. But then part of it is just, if James Harden was dealing, I think it was a foot injury and then also a shoulder injury for the last little bit of the season, and he just didn't look like he was looking at the rim, didn't look like he was looking to score, and that's not going to get it done, certainly without Kawhi Leonard. But when he's able to get that, I think the bellwether is always the step back. If he gets a couple of those going early, it opens up the game and it opens up his confidence, and then, you know, he can fill it up still pretty quickly. He's not going to be overwhelming the way he was when it was MVP-level Harden in Houston, but he's still a plus player when he's got that shot going and when he's able to take advantage of the defense with it. And the Mavericks, it seemed like the Mavericks just, I don't know if they thought that it was just going to be kind of like a good, you know, like, this is a good matchup for us. We've been rolling. We're steady. They got sort of a shoulder check in the chest early in the game, and it seemed like it took them a half to kind of catch their breath. I wonder if they're going to be a little bit more prepared for that in game two.
Talking to Dan Devine from Yahoo, Your Man Devine on Twitter. The podcast is No Cap Room. Lakers, Denver tonight. It felt like, I mean, Lakers go up early. Lakers get good games from LeBron and AD. Lakers get rolled. This is going to go 4 or 5. Like, this is pretty much holding to form.
Yeah, it feels like whatever game 5 of last year's series, or I guess game 9 of the last couple of seasons.
Right.
It was because we've understood the table stakes of the rules of engagement here. Like, when you can have great games from LeBron, great statistical games from LeBron, great statistical games from Davis, where they seem organized, they seem like they've got a good game plan, but when it gets tight late, you just, like, and I mean, even, like, I think the statistical indicators this season suggested that LA's clutch offense was better than it had been, and so on and so forth, but The Nuggets don't have to script anything in those situations because they've got, God, whatever, thousands of reps of Jokic, Murray pick and roll, and now 3 years of Gordon entering as the third man there with their floor spacers, with KCP and Michael Porter Jr. out there, and they've got just such such a flow and such a confidence in understanding where, like, you get into a tight game with them, they are going to score on like 9 straight possessions. So then then you have to keep pace. And if they're able to get one or two stops there, you're fighting from underneath. And so it's this sword of Damocles hanging over you for the first 43 minutes, right? Like, it's not just, or 42 or 41, whatever, because you know when it's in the guts of the game late there, they're going to out-execute you. It's what they do. And you're going to have to come up with something pretty dramatic to force them away from it. The Lakers, Darvin Ham continues to represent that there are more adjustments coming. Having had his team get beaten by the Nuggets nine straight times, you might want to see some more of those adjustments in game two, because they might not, if you wait a little bit longer into the series, you might not have enough time to get to them.
So which of these series do you think will go 7?
If Embiid is right, close to it as you can get, I think that's got a chance, because I don't think the Knicks are going to run away and hide offensively from them. I do buy what Philly has been able to do defensively. I think that Brunson struggled with them all season. It's, small guards can get swallowed up by size, and they've got options to put on him. So I can see that. I think that, and then I would say Dallas Clippers. I am the status of Kawhi is unclear. I believe Ty Lue had said he hasn't even taken contact yet. So, like, are you going to go from, with a day or two between games, getting him from, like, oh, now he's up to contact and now he's already back on the floor? That seems unlikely. And I would be really, really surprised if a team with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving puts up whatever 30 points and a half. I'd be very surprised if that happens again. So, with all these teams, that's the thing we always hear, don't overreact to game ones, right? All these teams that got punched in the mouth or that got rolled, whatever, like, all they need is one thing to break right for them, and then they go home with a split, and the entire geometry of the series can change from there. So I still think that the 4-5 in the West and the 2-7 in the East are going to go a long way. Ask me in 24 hours to see where things take us from there.
Dan, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jeff. Yep. Take care.
Dan Devine from...